Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. Middle of August already. It's August 15th, a Monday. We are celebrating 12 full years on the radio at the end of the year and 35 years on Tucson TV and radio. The Buckmaster Show from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, the Buckmaster Show live line, when we do our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We begin with our Monday political face-off, sponsored by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe is our go-to guy for all of our framing needs. Kind of call him... Well, I think his operation is the gold standard for quality and professionalism, for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session, or you can even do it electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Our Monday political face-off features, seated to my right, John Munger, well-known Tucson attorney, former president of the Arizona Board of Regents, one-time Republican candidate for Arizona governor, former chair of the Republican Party in Arizona, and Jeff Rogers, another well-known Tucson attorney, former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Jeff and John, how was the weekend? Jeff, how'd it go?
Well, it was pretty nice. The rain let up a little bit yesterday. That was nice.
We're getting a lot of rain.
Getting a lot of rain.
It's great.
Kind of like to have a little gap here and dry out a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a lovely weekend.
And then today, it looked like there's just kind of like it's not fog.
It's
a haze. I think it's just a heavy humidity.
It is.
Just not used to seeing that kind of humidity.
That's right.
We're having, what's nice, John, is the temperatures have been moderate.
Oh, the temperatures have been wonderful.
Yeah.
It's not been a hot summer at all, really.
No, it really hasn't. And it's so far a very robust monsoon. So, Jeff and John, we're in uncharted territory. A former president of the United States under possible investigation for violations of the Espionage Act, obstruction, and theft of government documents.
It's pretty shocking. I think what is the most stunning about it is how recalcitrant Trump was about this. And in January, they requested this stuff be returned, and some of it was. And then they had later meetings with him again, and more boxes were retrieved. And then finally, they discovered there were still boxes missing, and they issued a grand jury subpoena to force him to return them. They ignored them. And here's where one of his lawyers might be in trouble. A lawyer signed a form saying there were no further classified documents in the possession of Donald Trump. Hopefully the lawyer was relying upon Trump assuring him of that, because if the lawyer knew otherwise, then that lawyer's in deep trouble as well. And so they finally had no alternative but to get a warrant and go in there and seize this property. And some of it's pretty serious classified top secret documents that there's a dossier on President Macron of France. There's rumored to be some nuclear documents in there that are part of this.
Raw rumor.
Yeah, and that one we're not sure of, but they've pretty much verified the Macron one, and that of these 11 boxes were classified and four of them were top secret. And top secret is the highest classification there is. Other than there's one slightly above that, they call it SCI documents. I'm not sure what the SCI stands for, but those are documents like the Macron documents, which are basically intelligence gathering on some of our own allies. So one has to wonder, what was his scheme here? What was he? Why was he, hoarding these materials that he was not entitled to possess? I think Trump has finally ran into something where he's going to be held responsible for it.
You've been saying
some of these are really serious offenses. They carry up to 20 years in prison.
Yeah, well, Jeff, virtually all he said is speculation, because we don't know what the documents are. We don't know whether they're classified or not. Trump is claiming that they were declassified.
Well, it says on the return.
Here's what we know. Well, his attorney says they were not classified. But here's what we know. What we know is that there had been talks, as there had been with Barack Obama, the same type of thing, negotiations to return documents. Obama had some. All the presidents do. They take some documents. The negotiations had been going on. Documents were returned. In June of this year, this summer, the FBI said, we want to come in and look at this basement room that you've got in Mar-a-Lago where you have all these boxes, and we want to look at them. And Trump said, fine. And they came in and looked at all the boxes.
And previous to this raid?
Yes, this was in June.
Right, and that's when they
put, wait.
That's when they did the grand jury subpoena.
No, wait a minute. Let me finish. So they went in and looked at these documents, FBI and the archives people, and they said, put an extra lock. After looking at the documents, they said, put an extra lock on this. He did. No communications from the FBI after that. What they do instead is they go out and do this raid with a warrant. Now, we don't know what was in the warrant affidavit, so we don't know the basis for this warrant. We know that Trump had been fully cooperating and that the FBI hadn't contacted him after June after they'd looked at these boxes. They just came in and raided him. Now, if Trump was, and he was, it's undisputed, he had been cooperating, he had let them into the room, they had gone through these boxes, and all of a sudden you get this raid with no further communications.
Actually, that's not true, John.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
They subpoenaed the documents, and he refused to turn them over.
No, that is not true. There were no
communications.
There were no communications after June.
No, there was a subpoena, Jeff, from the grand jury after.
No, that is not true. There were no communications from the government of any nature after June. And all of a sudden we get this raid. Now, we don't know what the raid was about because there's been no transparency. We haven't seen the affidavit that justifies a warrant. People need to know that to get a warrant, you first need to file an affidavit with the judge. And that is done by the FBI. There's nobody there to contradict what goes in that affidavit. The judge takes it at face value. We know the FBI has lied before. They did it on the FISA warrants back in the Russia hoax. So we don't know what the FBI put in that affidavit to convince the judge to issue the warrant. And then what happens is we get this warrant out. Trump is claiming that the documents were declassified by him. And number two, the FBI still hasn't disclosed the affidavit that supposedly justifies this.
Now, okay, let's let Jeff.
Well, let me just here. Let me just finish one
okay.
quick comment.
Real quickly.
This is an unprecedented intrusion into the president's documents. We're now becoming a banana republic where we are weaponizing the IRS. Now we got 87,000. We've doubled the size of the IRS, and we've gone after a past president just like they do in the banana republics. This is unprecedented, and we need unprecedented transparency from the Biden administration and Merrick Garland, and we aren't getting it.
Okay, now it's your turn, Jeff.
Well, let me tell you how it actually works. First off, one thing a lot of people don't realize is that the vast majority of FBI agents are actually lawyers. They may not be practicing or licensed lawyers, but they were recruited out of law school. They continually recruit from our law school. So most of these FBI agents are highly, highly qualified. Not only are they highly qualified, but this warrant was signed off on by the head of the FBI, who was appointed by Donald Trump, by the way. And not only that, but then when it went to the Department of Justice, it had to be signed off by the senior most people in the Department of Justice. And in this case, that included the Attorney General himself, who said he authorized the warrant. Then, not only that, you have to go to an independent magistrate, and you can either submit an affidavit or you can do it with sworn testimony. I go through these things almost every day. I look at FBI agents' sworn testimony or their affidavits in favor of the warrant. And not only that, but this transparency, it cannot exist right now, because the fact is that you don't see these affidavits in favor of the warrant until a criminal case is actually filed. And then it becomes part of what's called the disclosure in the case, which are all of the police reports and all of the items that you would receive from the government once a prosecution commences. And the last thing that the Justice Department is going to do is expose an affidavit right now when there may or may not be criminal charges. If there are not criminal charges, the last thing you want out there is kind of what something Comey did to Hillary Clinton, is to get a bunch of innuendo out there in front of the public when that person, in Hillary's case, was never indicted. And so you basically embarrass and humiliate a United States citizen, and here it would be even worse, a former president, with allegations that may or may not end up proving to be a crime or not. But my gut feeling here tells me that Trump is going to get indicted this time. This one is more serious. And you can just imagine what the magistrate was thinking. He was, when they come with him with an affidavit, he had to be looking at it and go, oh my God, I'm going to have to. You think former that magistrate president? Didn't yeah. scrutinize that more carefully than any affidavit he's ever read in his entire career? Mm. Of course he did.
All right.
And of course Merrick Garland did. I mean, this is serious business, even in a routine criminal matter, but especially when you might be accusing a former president of the United States.
John, you'll be up to the plate. We're going to take our break right here. It's our Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. John Munger and Jeff Rogers back right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is John Trout. Start your day well-informed and join me for America in the Morning, weekday mornings at 5 before Wake Up Tucson on 1030 KVOI The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zilkalo Village Studio. Our Monday political face-off today features John Munger and Jeff Rogers, and obviously we're talking about one of the big stories maybe even of our time. Jeff and John. And John, let's begin with you, John Munger. You heard Jeff. He believes an indictment will be forthcoming. You do not, I assume.
Well, I don't know. Okay. Jeff has been saying Trump's going to be indicted for 5 years, and he's been wrong every time. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Now, Jeff was talking about a couple of things. Number one, he's admitted there's going to be no transparency on the affidavit unless and until they indict Trump. That's going to take many months because they have to sift through these documents to see what's there. So there's going to be no transparency. We're all going to wonder what was in the affidavit. But what we've got here is the potential, and I'm going to emphasize potential, but in my opinion, credibly, the weaponization of the federal government against conservatives, and Trump in particular. We have had, Jeff talked about the FBI agents and how wonderful they are, and I agree. The rank and file are wonderful people. But 14 FBI agents have blown the whistle on the FBI to Congress, saying that the FBI has been weaponized against the conservatives and Trump, and that there is an unequal system of justice. They don't enforce the law against Hillary Clinton, who destroyed 30,000 documents, classified documents. No, not going to do anything to her. They don't do anything to the about the Hunter Biden investigation, which could well prove that the administration and Biden are compromised with the Chinese and other countries. This is a potential weaponization. It looks fishy. It used to be that we trusted the FBI, but they've proven that the high levels, high echelons, are not trustworthy.
All right, let's go to the live line. Matt has called us. Matt, what's on your mind?
Yeah, very quickly, just three quick points. Number one, I really doubt the FBI agents even had the correct security clearances to even touch those documents, and I'm going to be very clear about that. Just because they're FBI agents, most of them might have a secret clearance. Very few of them are going to have the correct clearances to even touch the document. It's a big deal.
That's true.
Number two, I'm going to say that since Comey's mistake about releasing, you know, making the qualm about Hillary Clinton before the election, Merrick Garland's decision to do this now is probably even 10 times worse. Donald Trump was literally almost out of the limelight less than six to seven weeks ago. We have now made him a martyr. Three, this is the last point I'll make. I'm going to be devil's advocate here, but I think it's a very serious thing. Presidential records are an extension of the presidency. You have three separate branches of government. You just had basically the same equivalence of the FBI walking into the White House, past Secret Service, and grabbing any documents they wanted right now if they were to go into Joe Biden's. If they can go after Donald Trump like this, they can just right now go into Joe Biden's desk and grab whatever documents he wants. I know it seems that, so those are my 3 points. Bye.
All right, Jeff.
Well, on the last point, I just don't agree. The fact is that, you know, a sitting president, they're not going to do that because the sitting president has the authority to possess those documents. And were Trump still president, he would have the authority to possess those documents, but he didn't. And the buck has to stop somewhere, and that we have to uphold the rule of law. And even a former president is subject to the same laws that we all are subject to. And it's unfortunate that he's now back in the limelight, but, you know, he's apparently, you know, looks like he's violated some very serious laws, and he needs to be held accountable for that. And Trump has spent his entire life doing things that he's never been held accountable for on almost every occasion. And so I think the chickens are coming home to roost. I think he's probably going to get indicted in Atlanta. And Fulton County is not a place where he's going to be pleased to be on trial. And I think he's going to they're going to initiate they're pretty much done gathering evidence in that New York case against the Trump companies. And I think that there's a pretty fair chance that there's going to be a case there as well, a fraud case that will end up probably dismembering the Trump organization. So that's where it looks like it's going anyway.
Matt made a good point, John, about Trump is back in the limelight, right? And it's going to help. Perhaps politically.
Oh, this has energized the Republican base. And it has made people very angry. Jeff says, Democrat says, well, nobody's exempt from the law. How about Hillary Clinton?
They determined she didn't break any laws, John.
That is not true. If you heard Jim Comey's report on television, he said she violated the law, but he wasn't going to prosecute her.
No, he didn't say that. He said she made some terrible personal decisions and that she should not have done, but they couldn't find a violation of the law.
No, that isn't what he said. You go back and listen
anyway,
to the report. You think of one time in the last 3 years, 4 years, they've ever prosecuted a liberal. They never do. They only go after conservatives. You can't think of one time, I can't, that they've ever prosecuted a Democrat, but it's pull out all the stops to prosecute, use the full power of the government against conservatives. It is questionable at best, questionable. And at worst, it's corruption. Now, we don't have the answer. Jeff says, well, Trump's done these terrible things. We don't even know what the documents say. How can Jeff say Trump's done these terrible things? They don't know what the documents say. They don't know if they're classified. They certainly don't have anything to do with nuclear codes, because if they had to do with nuclear codes, why the hell did the FBI wait so long? It's just one of those things that really looks questionable in light of what has happened in the past several years, the selective prosecution of Republicans, raids, raiding Roger Stone in his house when he's in his pajamas in bed with his wife. What are you talking about?
He was convicted of a crime.
He was convicted of a crime.
And then pardoned by Trump.
Yeah, but the point is, Jeff, the raid was unnecessary. If they'd called up, the normal procedure is you call the guy up and you say, will you come?
And voluntarily.
Mm-hmm. And Roger Stone has repeatedly said, if they just asked me, I'd have come down there.
John, this is what I do for a living. They do that all the time. They do that all the time to all kinds of people, because the only time that they offer voluntary turn-ins and voluntary turnovers of evidence is when they believe honestly believe that the person won't destroy it. And I think that the FBI wisely understood that Trump is the kind of person that would destroy evidence or hide it or something like that.
The documents were under surveillance. They were on CCTV. There was no way they could be stolen.
But that CCTV was controlled by Trump. He can turn it off at any time.
But he didn't.
Well,
what we know is this looks fishy. I'm not saying it is, but Jeff is saying, "Oh, they're not going to turn in the affidavit to show what they're after."
Well, who's done criminal defense work for 30 years, I can tell you, it doesn't look fishy to me. It looks like pretty routine stuff.
You're biased. You're a biased Democrat. You hate Trump. You've admitted that many times. And I don't trust your opinion on this either. You've said for years he's going to be indicted. He hasn't been indicted yet.
And it looks like it's coming down.
Well, yeah, it's always coming down. Has been for 5 years, Jeff.
Oh, boy. All right, guys. Thank you very much, John. Great to see you. And Jeff, thanks a lot. The Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, moesgallery.com, the website. We'll be back. We're going to talk with our monthly visit with Will Humble, the former Arizona health director. Lots to dig into, lots to unpack. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Fast
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's the middle of August, Monday, August the 15th. Bill Buckmaster with you in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. My goodness, it's so wonderful to get the rain, and Green Things is looking so good. All those beautiful plants are ready for you to take home. You know, one of the wonderful things about Green Things, the help that they have, the associates that will wait on you, point you in the right direction for what is just right for your garden. They're open daily, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. When you're there, stop by Zocalo Village. Some beautiful Talavera pottery and some great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. So the websites, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. We're just so honored to have people like Will Humble with us as one of our contributors. Will's our contributor on the Buckmaster Show on public health. He appears on this program monthly. We've got 24 contributors like Will who are so very knowledgeable in their field. Will is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. 30 years in public health, actually more than 30 now, including 20 at the Arizona Department of Health Services. He served in various capacities, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. Will joins us now on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Will, how are you?
Good afternoon, Bill. Everything's going just fine up here, except we don't get nearly the rain you do.
No, you're just getting really a fraction of what we've had up at our place in the lower central foothills, Will. We're pushing 8 inches so far.
I measured 1.3 in my yard.
Oh, no.
I should be grateful for that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of meager, but maybe there's still time, maybe a month or so left of the rainy season. All right, the numbers that come out on Wednesday, last Wednesday, there were indications maybe the latest surge in COVID now starting to go down in Arizona. What's your take?
Yeah, what I've been looking at is hospitalizations, new hospitalizations statewide, and they are going down. So there was a little blip over the last couple of months, nothing like we saw over the winter or the winter before that. But there was an increase in hospitalizations from COVID in June and July, which is 6 months after the big surge, remember, over the Christmas holidays. But that's starting to ebb down now. And still some people being hospitalized and even some deaths still. But it's, you know, it's nothing like it had been so many times earlier.
I think I heard on CBS News, maybe it was at the top of the hour, Moderna gave approval today for a new type of new booster in the United Kingdom. Do you think that's coming to a pharmacy near you soon?
Soon being the key word. I think probably by November we'll have an Omicron-specific booster shot that's available here around, you know, Arizona. I don't think it's going to happen before November, though.
It's interesting because the pharmacies are all starting now to talk about flu season. Last year, I opted for a really early flu shot. I think it was August when they first came on board. I think I'm going to wait a month or two this year, Will.
I'd wait till October, quite honestly. And you'll hear public health people say, oh, you know, take the first opportunity. And I'm like, well, now wait a minute. You know, you get a big boost of immunity after that vaccine. I'm talking about influenza now. Why not wait until October when you're more likely to have that protection in March when you might need it? So I think it's too early, you know, until I think it's October is a way better month. I think you're doing the right thing.
A lot of people, a lot of speculation now that 7 out of 10 Americans have been infected with COVID. There's been a lot of speculation turning to those that have not had COVID, at least not that they know of, that maybe there's a genetic component. Maybe it's something to do with diet, exercise. Who knows? Good air quality. What's your thinking, Will Humble?
Well, I think there's going to be research going on for the next many years, and I don't think there's any answers to that question right now. You know, why some people were, I mean, part of it's behavior. I mean, part of it's going to be as a result of, you know, how diligent were people? Did they choose their environment carefully? Were they wearing a good tight-fitting mask when they went out into the public and comparing those to other people? So, like, that's one of the things they'll have to figure out when they're doing the research, is teasing out what might be a biological component to risk and what is the self-reported behavior of the people. And that's a tougher thing to you know, because you're relying on people's, you know, recollection of how safe they were and where they went. And that can throw a lot of flies in the ointment of research.
Since we talked last, two new studies have provided more evidence that the coronavirus pandemic originated in Wuhan, China, in a market where live animals were sold. One of the researchers was from the University of Arizona, so that's kind of a local story. What's your take on this, that the this escaped, emerged from the wild, rather than escaping from a Chinese laboratory?
Well, on this one, I listen to Dr. Warabi. So yeah. I trust him.
Michael Warabi.
He's a good researcher. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'm not going to form my own opinion. I trust his research, and his research has suggested that it's extremely likely that it came out of the part of Wuhan where they had that wet market rather than any other laboratory type of source. So I'm with Dr. Warabi. He's published a couple of really good articles in very reputable journals. And so he'd be a good, actually, guest for you on the show someday.
Yeah,
we haven't done it already.
Had him on a couple of times. He's always a good guest. I want to bring up polio. The polio virus is rearing its ugly head in America again.
Well, so what you're talking about is some researchers in New York who, or maybe it was the health departments there, who were collecting samples from wastewater in the wastewater system there in New York, and they say they detected the polio virus, but that's different from having actual transmission of polio. So there was a case, I think, in, and I don't know if it was which borough it was in, but somewhere in New York City, a case of polio. And by the way, we've had cases of polio in Arizona during my career, but they were always travel cases. So, for example, we had a case during my career when an unvaccinated person went to Haiti because their parents never vaccinated them when they were kids, and she was doing relief work in Haiti and contracted the polio virus and actually had a really bad outcome.
Wow.
That goes way back in my career. So it's not unprecedented to have cases related to travel. But it's extremely rare to see a case that would have been not related to travel. And the places where it's northern Pakistan, Afghanistan, parts of Nigeria, those are the places that still have transmission of the polio virus going on. And by the way, we got really close to eradicating polio like we did with smallpox. But the war-torn areas of Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Nigeria prohibited that interrupted the eradication efforts, and so we were never able to put a stake through polio. But it's possible to do. It's something that can be done because the polio virus only affects humans, just like smallpox.
All right, Will, stick around. When we come back, let's get a monkeypox update from Will Humble. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, 790-2040. For any comments or questions for Will Humble, Will would be happy to entertain any questions. We'll be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Tom Sullivan. Join me weeknights from 7 to 10 for the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. If you're looking for a great weekend getaway or maybe a midweek getaway, pile in the car or the truck. Take a three-hour drive to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. So much to do over there, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, which is very green right now. They've had a very robust monsoon season, 84 mid... Oh, it's a nice temperature, mid-80s over there in Silver City today. And usually they're about 10 degrees cooler because of the elevation. Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org for information about where to stay, some great places in that area, and all sorts of recreation opportunities. By the way, not only great places to stay, they've got some really nice restaurants in downtown Silver City, all that beautiful Victorian architecture. Check it out. Make a great weekend getaway. Let's go back now for our monthly conversation with Will Humble, the former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. He also does right now a very interesting blog on public health as part of his Director of Marketing and Public Relations and Executive Director for the Arizona Public Health Association. We'll give our listeners again the blog website.
Yeah, you can visit www.azpha.org, and it's right there on the homepage. And I try to put something up new every day. Today Good. Is about worker safety.
Yeah, worker safety. Before we talk about monkeypox, one item you had up is that the U.S. Department of Labor is in the process of revoking the state control of worker safety enforcement. Why in the world is that happening?
Well, the way worker safety works in the U.S. is that there's a national law around worker health and safety requirements, and the federal government doesn't want to do the work, really. They'd rather delegate that to the state, to the various states. And in our state, it's within the Industrial Commission, and it's the Arizona Department of Occupational Safety and Health. And the OSHA program, the national program, has seen a pattern in Arizona of non-enforcement of workplace health and safety standards going back more than 7 years. And so back in April, they opened up a procedure whereby the federal government would take back the responsibility for worker safety in Arizona because of the non-performance of the state program under the Industrial Commission, and which is the appointees are from Governor Ducey. And so they've opened that process, and they're collecting some public comments at this point to determine whether they're going to fully revoke that authority, put them on some sort of probation program, et cetera. So I don't know what they're going to do in the end. Quite honestly, what I think they may end up doing is waiting until November and seeing what happens with the election and determining whether or not they believe there's a commitment by whoever wins the governor's race to worker safety, and they kind of go from there. That's just my hunch, but I don't know that that's exactly what OSHA's going to do.
What's the overview on monkeypox in Arizona right now, Will?
So it's right now transmitting, dozens and dozens of cases. It's very different from COVID-19 because it's a direct contact spread type of virus. So the direct contact between someone who has lesions and another person is how the virus spreads. The virus is on the lesions that people get. There's a vaccine for the disease, but it's in short supply. I think Maricopa County has given about 4,000 vaccines out. I'm not sure about Pima County. And the transmission is still circulating among men who have sex with other men. Not to say it's 100% going to stay that way. I think it may leak out of that population at some point, but that's where it is right now still. And in fact, I think in Maricopa County, at least, I think every single case has been, I don't think there's been a single case among women. It's all been men who have sex with men. So that's in a nutshell what's going on in Arizona.
Are you protected if you're of a certain age, you've had at least one smallpox shot?
That's an open question. I don't think there's a good answer to that. The smallpox vaccine does work against monkeypox. The question is, if you got the smallpox vaccine in, say, the 1970s, is that residual immunity still going to protect you? I can't say that it's not. I think it's possible that it would still provide protection. I think most likely the answer to that question is that it won't protect you from an infection, but it would most likely protect you from having a serious course of the illness.
Let's talk a little bit about this big package that was passed in Washington. What are the public health ramifications of that for those of us here in Arizona, Will Humble?
So the most immediate thing is with drug prices. And so what the bill does, the president's about to sign it maybe today or tomorrow, but what the bill will do is eventually start driving down the prices of certain drugs within the Medicare program. So seniors out there that are listening can expect some relief, but not immediate. I don't want to paint a picture that drug prices are going to go down a lot. They made some tweaks around the out-of-pocket costs for those seniors that are taking a lot of medications that are in that, you're familiar with the donut hole around the Medicare Part D program. So now, it's not, I give the bill a C- on that, because they could have done a lot better job by giving a lot more authority to Medicare to negotiate drug prices, but they can't start negotiating prices with the drug companies until 2026. And even then, that first year, they can only negotiate the price of 10 drugs. Now, there is a good provision in there that says that drug companies can only increase the price of their medications after launch in the Medicare program by whatever the inflation rate is, so which is high right now. But so there are some ongoing limitations on drug prices that people will benefit from, not nearly what could have been. I mean, it got watered down a lot, which is super disappointing because, you know, I like market-driven solutions to things, and if you don't let someone negotiate a price, you're not going to get a good price. Let's imagine going to buy a car, and there was, you know, you can't negotiate. This is the price. I mean, that's what's been the case in the Medicare program with drugs forever, and that's going to eventually start changing in 2026. I was going to go on to clean energy, but if you want to stay on drugs.
I had one more drug question. Can a state health director or a health department negotiate prices of prescription drugs?
They do. The state agency, the Medicaid program, Access, is able to, in a way, negotiate prices. Medicaid, Access, gets better prices than Medicare because the enabling law, when it was passed way back in the Johnson administration, gave the Medicaid program better ability to get rebates and negotiate drug prices. So the answer is yes, within Medicaid, but not the state health director. That would be the director of Access, which right now her name is Jamie Snyder, who's, by the way, a really good public official. I really have a lot of respect for her.
All right, the clean energy piece of this.
Mostly it is in the form of tax credits and tax break incentives. So you keep hearing, and I keep hearing it on the radio, the big spending package, really it on clean energy. That's not really what it is, but it is mostly, I mean, there is some direct spending, like to, you know, electrify the U.S. Postal Service fleet and stuff like that. But mostly it's changes to tax law to give incentives to utilities, businesses, and just individuals to invest in cleaner energy and energy efficiency, which doesn't get the respect that it should, which is weatherizing your home and that kind of thing. So, for example, at the individual level, there are going to be more aggressive tax benefits for buying an electric vehicle or even a used electric vehicle. While it's not spending money in that way, what's happening is people are going to pay less taxes, and so that affects the revenue coming into the federal government, so they consider that spending, I guess. It's actually a bill that generates more revenue than it spends because they closed a loophole whereby very large corporations were avoiding paying any taxes at all, and while they were able to still sneak in some ways of avoiding tax, there's going to be at least a baseline of 15% that big giant corporations with more than $1 billion in revenue are going to end up having to start paying based on what they say they're making, you know, through their stocks and to their shareholders and things like that. So it's actually reduces the federal budget by $360 billion over a 10-year period. But the bottom line is it provides more incentives for folks to get at an individual to get, say, for example, electric vehicles, weatherize their house, that kind of stuff. And then utilities will have more incentives to invest in solar and wind rather than, you know, gas and coal and things like that.
All right. Will Humble of the Arizona Public Health Association. Follow his blog. Go to their website, arizonapha.com. That's correct, isn't it, Will?
Yep.
All right. Have a great day. We'll see you in September. Thank you.
Okie doke. Bye.
Thanks a lot. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Mid-August edition already. Hope everybody has a great afternoon. On behalf of John, engineering and producing the program on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster saying, hope you have a great afternoon.